You're listening to the New Old Heads podcast, shot live every Tuesday at twitch.tv/newoldheads and released every Thursday at noon via bringingdowntheband.com. The show is brought to you by Coleman Dental, Printfinity, Indie CD and Vinyl. Support the show directly by becoming a member at patreon.com/newoldheads.
You are now tuned in to the New Old Heads podcast. I am Major 7th. Crew's in the building. My man Jay Moore, how are you doing on this fine day?
I'm doing well. You know what it is. Peace, freedom, and reparations. You know the vibes.
I like it.
Fine day.
Such a fine day. Yeah. Longevity. How are you, sir?
Doing great. I'm making Terry do all the work today.
Oh.
He's making me, not paying making, me.
Yeah, exactly.
It's free labor.
Yes, it's like slave labor almost.
Prison. Yeah. Slave labor?
I'm going to leave it alone. I usually interject there, but I'm going to leave that alone. I'm staying out of that one.
NBC. No, let me stop.
I'm going to stay out of it.
I'm the resident Nat Turner of the show.
Well, man, DJ J Diff, how are you, sir?
Salutations. I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm good, brother. I can't complain.
Yeah.
Hey, everything's good.
That's good, man.
Let's talk LB business. Talk Little Brother. Let's talk Mandalore Watch. Let's talk documentary. Let's talk thoughts. Let's talk what we found out that was new. Let's talk about a very good documentary, because I personally enjoyed it. Love the cartoons, love the graphics, storytelling. I love the interviews, the footage, old school footage.
Love the production.
Love the production too. Yeah, they did a good job with the whole thing. But I'm glad you got a chance to watch it. We mentioned it a little bit earlier. But what were some of your takeaways from the documentary, man? Because I personally myself, I loved it.
As I was gonna say before, I kind of like hearing the actual story behind how they met, the differences they had with Ninth. Like, I didn't know that Ninth was pretty much the common denominator around what transpired with them and why it didn't end up sticking with him not being there. So
it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when they, them first two albums, man, I ain't gonna lie, that Ninth production, especially on the Minstrel Show, to me, is what helped me. You know what I'm saying? I mean, not to take anything away from rapper Big Pooh or Fonte, because obviously that's what helped me, because it's the verses.
Right.
But that production, it's behind, yeah, it's the glue that makes it stick.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to see that when they were touring, he wasn't going, and they were using Ninth's picture to get people to come to the show.
I didn't know that.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
Yes. I've never, when I've thought of Little Brother, I've never once singled out anybody.
Me neither.
To be, and it definitely wouldn't be Ninth if I were to single out anybody.
I could see it from a promo.
From the time frame that they mentioned it, I could see
because
people,
of his work with Jay-Z.
Yes, I could see that making sense. But even to your point, when they had the mock posters up, when they were like Little Brother, and it just had his face on there, I could imagine how frustrating that would have been.
Oh,
Fonte
sure.
talked about how frustrated he was, and you know, Pooh as well. He's like, you start messing with the bread now, because like that one show where they were talking about where he couldn't come in there and he brought his wife.
That's wild.
And
they didn't really want him there. And mm-hmm. There's like Atlantic pretty much flew him out.
Yeah.
And then he brought his wife. And they're like, this ain't a vacation. This is work.
I think the most interesting thing about the whole thing that I just have not been privy to, when I think back in retrospect, is most people before this documentary came out just always kind of felt like there was a Little Brother with Ninth, and then there's the Little Brother after Ninth.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But what this kind of revealed is that Little Brother has realistically almost always just been Pooh and Fonte.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
And I, even to the point to where, like, when I got hip to Little Brother, it was like after the Minstrel Show dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And so realistically,
when that came out,
he was already out the group.
Yeah.
So it was like, wow. So realistically, the entire time, I can only imagine like holding on to something like this and not really talking about it in the public and all the things that have transpired for as long as it has. Like, mm-hmm. I know Ninth gets the questions constantly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure
he's probably sick of it.
Especially so much more now with this documentary being out.
Yeah.
Because obviously people that are fans of Ninth are going to watch this because that's how they were introduced to Ninth Wonder.
Yep.
And 9 times out of 10, they still rock with Lil Brother too.
Mm-hmm.
And they still rock with Ninth, you know what I'm saying, separately, kind of like us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're fans of both.
True.
But it's cool to see, not necessarily cool, but it's interesting to see how all of that unfolded.
Yeah.
and to where we're at now with it as well. You know,
it's like
saying?
We've been waiting for this episode this season for a very long time, yeah. And it finally came out.
Yeah, because I remember like me and you used to talk a lot about Ninth Wonder and Little Brother and possibly trying to set up something to yeah. where they wouldn't know that they were going to be together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I'm saying? Like a
Ninth and Rhapsody with Foreign Exchange yeah. and then also rapper Big Pooh on tour with like
yeah.
who he's on tour with.
You know what I'm
like,
saying?
You guys just magically pull all oh, so wow. up.
They're all here.
Imagine if separate. That had happened. What would have happened though? Would've you know what I'm saying?
Would have been a problem.
It probably would have been a problem with everybody involved, yeah. including us.
That footage would have been in this documentary had that
yeah.
shown up.
Yeah.
That, these, that happened.
Yeah, these cats in Indianapolis thought mm-hmm. they could run a number
put us
on
all
us
together.
You've yeah. been in another documentary.
Nah, we definitely would have been in that documentary.
Yeah, but that's the biggest thing out of everything that kind of stood out to me. Obviously, they're one of my favorite groups, if not mm-hmm. my favorite group. And actually,
the influence,
and yeah. it also, you know, it even back. I was even thinking this week about, you know, what we've talked about on the show about our favorite groups and favorite duos. They're right. definitely a duo.
Yeah,
you know, like it's less a group and more a duo. And the thing is when I think about it, it's not even. And I bet they were probably this way too. It's not even that like. It's a problem that Ninth is not going on tour or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I think it just happenstance with how Ninth blew up the way that he did.
Right.
And then he wasn't really super attached to what they were doing.
It was just know, like in the same token, though, it was almost like they were pushing him to go do that.
Mm-hmm.
And once he went to go do that, they're kind of like, well, you just stay over there.
Yeah.
So it to me, it's almost like... you can't necessarily blame it all on Ninth.
For sure, yeah.
Because they were like, nah, you go do that. We'll do this. And then by the time you came back around, it was like, well, we don't want him here.
Yeah.
So you can't have it both ways.
I think they just
you know
came to
saying?
That realization. It's kind of like the story of the Goody Mob with CeeLo. When CeeLo and Danger Mouse and all that stuff popped off. And Big Gip was like, man, I didn't see him for 5 years. Like, we were working on new Goody Mob stuff. And then we're like, he's like, man, I'm gonna go over here and do this thing real quick. He's like, I didn't see him for 5 years.
Hmm.
So, I mean,
if you notice in the doc, they say they were happy for the Jay-Z thing to happen. I never once heard them hate about that, which is dope. And they one thing that also stood out to me was Pooh and Fonte talking about how much of an introvert Ninth is, you know, just his right. personality.
Mm-hmm.
So they took that into consideration for when they were in the van together and the tour. They're like, he wouldn't have liked this anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, again, he was also married.
Yeah,
you know what
grown,
I mean?
Super grown.
And I think he's been teaching in university since like 2005, yeah. I think.
Oh, really?
Yep. I could be
he
wrong.
Has,
I mean, please correct me if I'm
he
wrong.
He has his own course. Yes, he
but
has
I mean,
his own
but
course.
But I think he's been doing it for like 17 years or something.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
So,
yeah.
Which is a long time.
That is.
When I heard Fonte talk about, because he mentioned it a couple times, about the tiptoeing concept. Sometimes I'm in, sometimes I'm out. As a group,
I could
see why that would be frustrating. It's not about we don't want to see you shine, go ahead and do your thing, but just don't, you can't toy with us. Mm-hmm. Like, let us just be our own entity and you do what you do. We still rock with you. And then everybody be cool. Yeah. So that little limbo point, I can see why that could be frustrating. That would bother me. Yeah.
That would frustrate me no
it
matter.
It would piss me off.
No matter who the person is.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like if that was Jay-Z, exactly. It would make me upset.
Yeah. Exactly. And then I kind of had given Ninth the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. Until they all kind of tried to reunite and spark that same flame and he was still just shooting them beats and not being in there to organically make this album happen. And that's kind of when I was like, they kind of got a point.
Let me ask you guys this and then I'll come to you to Jay Moore and your thoughts as well. But what do you think Ninth feels as he sits back and watches this whole thing develop? I'm talking about Made in Durham, the documentary rollout, because his work is still the soundscape for a lot of this stuff that's
and
going on.
He's still using it when he performs.
Exactly.
Because, and which, we
saw
was,
that.
Which I was surprised by, actually.
Yeah. And it's classic material that they all three were a part. So to sit back and watch, you know, your two brothers just go through the documentary, it's not about them dissing him. It's just about my life's work really...
Fonte made it be known. I still got love for him. You know what I'm saying? I love how us pretty much colliding put us to where we are today.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
they had a moment in time. It seemed like their moment in time was at North Carolina State.
Right.
I wonder how he feels to be able to
because
see
think about
this unfold.
It, that's when they were together doing. Yep. And then after that, It was pretty much just email.
Yeah, because they got the record deal, and
yeah,
they got up with DJ Flash, and he became their DJ, and
still DJing with them to this day.
You know, I don't know, man. I think it's probably bittersweet to some degree for
you. Talk about Ninth
for Ninth. Yeah, I feel like
they got an undeniable history.
You know, the fact that he never talks about it means that he has to feel some type of way about it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, because if he was just open and he would be like, well, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I've never heard him say anything about it ever.
Nah.
But
it just seems like a shame.
Oh, it is. 100%. You know what I mean? Especially like, from a fan standpoint.
Like,
yeah,
100%. Because I feel like even watching the doc and even kind of watching kind of how Pooh, I mean, obviously Pooh doesn't, well, I think the Pooh angle is different from the Fonte angle.
Very much so.
It was evident. Yeah, it was evident.
Pooh's like, nah, I'm,
when you see the cartoon, when he was like, the cartoon was like, we didn't tell you to bring your wife out here. He was like, we didn't tell you to bring your wife out here.
And Fonte's like, yeah, that was my bad. Yeah,
he said he shouldn't have had him do the talking.
Yeah, we should have maybe done this together as a thing, but
he was like, I'll do it.
You know, the brunt of the bad blood is definitely between Pooh and Ninth. And I think, I don't know if that, maybe that just can't be. I think they kind of alluded to it, and they may have even said it in there, if I remember correctly, about how Ninth maybe didn't view Pooh as like.
Pooh said he never respected him as an equal.
Yeah.
Never looked at him as an equal. Something
to that degree. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So when he told him about the show stuff, he said that probably, you know, piss him off a little bit more because it was coming from him.
Yeah.
He was on some, ain't nobody come to see you, Otis.
Yeah, yeah.
That type vibe, yeah.
What did you think, Jay?
Well, first of all, you know, just, first, I really enjoyed the documentary more than I thought I would, because, you know, sometimes you don't want to hear the backstory about how your favorite, one of your favorite groups, like, they don't really mess with each other as people.
Tribe Called Quest.
You know, like, sometimes it's hard to watch people who have started out as friends and have this organic thing that created this incredible artistic movement, and come to find out that, like, they don't go to their kids' birthday parties or whatever, you know, whatever the case may be. And you could tell, like you said, that at one point there was a time where it looked like Fonte and Ninth had pieced it up.
Yep.
You know, but I don't think that rift between Big Pooh and Ninth, I don't think either of them really care too.
It's some still there.
You know, and I enjoyed the documentary enough to where, you know, understanding that streaming does not pay the bills.
Yeah.
That I, you know, I sent the filmmakers $10.
Yeah.
You know, now mind you, it's, you know, you could make a little note, and I said, you know, I literally said, I know streaming does not pay the bills, you know, so here's my donation to, you know, keep artistic, you know, but I did put in there, the new old heads will be discussing. So I don't know where they publish the comments, but, you know, sometimes it's worth it to do that.
Yeah.
Just to go ahead and get our name
out
there.
They got a lot of views on that doc. I was actually kind of, I don't want to say surprised.
It's still going up, though. The numbers are still going up. Yeah.
You know, so
I literally just watched it last night.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, but it's hard, man. You know, when you think about the, you know, any group, Run and DMC don't really get along.
Yeah.
EPMD does not get along.
They had moments.
Well, the piece that was keeping Run DMC together is no longer here.
Yeah.
True. And that's what happens with a lot of these groups. There's always one person. It's kind of the one that's
the backbone,
keeping everybody together.
You know, the Wu-Tang Clan, I mean, you talk about eight people now, but that's a lot of personalities to manage, and everybody doesn't mess with everybody all of the time.
Hell, you guy wasn't even featured in the first installment of the TV series.
You know, he came in, what, season two?
Because they had some kind of riff going on. And
you got as openly said RZA's Beast was whack during this era to this era. Like, he hated it. So to your point, this happens.
You know, because I'll be honest, when I heard about, you know, we talked about this on the show maybe year and a half ago when we had the announcement. Mm-hmm. I wasn't particularly excited about having to watch this, you know, because
I was hyped.
I mean, I like to hear the stories about, yeah, we, you know, we got together in the dorm room, but then, like, you know, the whole point about it falling apart, and then, you know, I don't F with this person, you know, because there was a rift between Big Pooh and Fonte for a while.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, at one point, the three of them had just gone.
Nobody
their
was
ways.
Talking to anybody.
You know, it really came down to, like, hey, we got this show. Hey, it's right here. Somebody else had, you know, canceled. Let's go ahead and maybe.
Well, I mean, it came down to, you know, like Fife passing away.
Yeah.
That part.
You know, it
that
came
part.
Them realizing, like, oh, wow, this is another, maybe not maybe not look at, you know, you can see yourself in
somebody
a tribe.
That we were fans of.
Yeah, and then they're similar to us, right. You know. And
Pooh was saying he had just talked to Fife.
Yeah.
And it kind of hit home. Definitely hit home.
So it definitely seemed like it was trending in the right area.
Yeah.
Or the right direction whenever that was happening. Because, I mean, Knight did some production on Charity Starts at Home.
He sure did.
And his voice is on there, too, when he's talking about the whole marriage thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it was kind of like, as Little Brother fans, you're excited to hear that type of stuff.
The Pooh and Fonte thing, it didn't seem like it was. It just seems like, just looking at it from their perspective, like, if they didn't include anything about the relationship fallout with Ninth and all that stuff, I feel like the documentary wouldn't have been almost worthwhile because it's such
everything else we kind of already knew. It's almost like like we knew that they were the underdogs coming up in the music game, and I've said this before. It's almost like they were too late.
Yeah,
to the game. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they were right on time.
They were right on time and too late because Soulja Boy says he's the first one to use the internet and all that stuff to do blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, they were very instrumental in that, too.
Mm-hmm.
There was just
the OK Player boards were crazy.
OK Player boards.
People would be like, link. You know, somebody would talk about a song and then be like, link. And then somebody would have a link. And then everybody would have that on their, you know,
Soulja Boy
MP3 devices.
Yeah.
Soulja Boy was a YouTube guy.
Yeah, YouTube.
That was him. But message boards existed before that.
Right. And then, so, like, even how the radio shift happened. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about how everybody wants to hear this style of rap. And we got pretty much pigeonholed because they said we were the smart group.
Yeah.
And, I mean, a lot of that stuff that they're talking about is true when you talk about programming. And we've had plenty of conversations about programming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is exactly what was going on at the time. It's like, we want you to hear this type of music. All of these record stations have been brought, not record stations, but radio stations.
Yeah, we talk about the deregulation of rap, you know.
Right.
And I was like, okay, finally someone else has said it, because we've talked about that on the show more than once.
Right. So, I mean, and then them just piecing that together and seeing it happen in real time, that they're putting out all this great music and it's just not being heard. Like, the Minstrel Show is one of the dopest releases. Like, for me, I give it like a top 20 release of all time, like, of my hip hop favorites.
That album is that good.
Yeah.
That album is that good, top to bottom.
And to know that it pretty much bricked when it came out.
You know, but what was really cool to me was how they were at the intersection of so many things that were happening, because, you know, at one point when they were having the conversation about, you know, BET won't play this because they think it's too intelligent, they're talking to Charlamagne Tha God.
Yeah.
When he was in South Carolina.
He wasn't big yet.
He was in Columbia.
So, and then there's the the stuff with I was like, wait a minute, there's Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
And then
Kendrick Lamar and Ab-Soul.
And then, you know, there's a part where like DJ Drama talks about how important that Gangsta Grillz was.
That's crazy because, and I hate to even say this,
it's not cap either.
I wasn't even hip to that.
That was incredible. I loved that Gangsta Grillz.
I was not hip to that Gangsta Grillz.
Oh my god, it's heat all over that.
And I've been hip to Lil Brother since before their first album, because OK Player actually had a sampler CD that it came out at one point in time, and I had bought that. And Lil Brother, I think, had two or three songs on there.
Whatever You Say or something.
Yeah. Man, this slaps all over.
Man, I wasn't hip to that DJ Drama's Gangsta Grillz tape.
Because there's two versions of it. There's one, and it's called there's the Drama Free version without all the drops on it.
Yeah. That's the one I listened to today, because I was like, let me check this out because I'm not hip.
Yeah, man.
Put me on.
No,
but I left that documentary. I left after watching it, just realizing how dope and how honestly they are one of the coldest hip hop groups ever. I'm talking about just a duo, or however you want to slice it, with Ninth or without. If you want to do duo, that's cool. But their catalog, revisiting the catalog as we drove down to Durham and, you know, watching the documentary, you know, you go back through playlists and, like Terry said, just dabbling the mixtapes and chilling circle, like all those old projects. These guys are consistent. They've been consistent for a long time, and they've put out high quality product at an elite level for a long time.
Even how they got discovered by
Questlove.
Oh, when that he had
story,
the CD.
Yeah.
I didn't know the full story like that.
Yeah, I didn't know it.
What are the odds, bro?
He could have easily just thrown it away.
But he kept it. And then he talked about how he stayed up all night until the next day listening to it.
Yeah, skinny,
what are the odds?
Please tell me that ain't my CD in the toilet, man.
Exactly.
To it.
It literally could have been that.
Yeah.
And I laughed when he said he was. Questlove was torn between, you know,
saying something.
Did he want to put it on the board because there's so many people and he gets so many projects? And he was like, nah, this is too good. I got to let people know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that changed, that literally changed everything.
What if they was on OK Player, like, not like the message board, but like, what if they were like torn with the Roots and things of that nature? I wonder how that would have kind of changed things.
You know, but they were on Atlantic when T.I. and is that Atlantic?
Yeah, yeah. T.I. was on there.
They didn't really fit
at all. At all. You know, they were the outcasts for sure.
Because honestly, as soon as I heard, like, you know, said rapper said something, I was like, was it T.I.?
I was wondering, because basically taking the minstrel show literally is what the argument pretty much was. Yeah.
That sounds T.I.-ish, where maybe he could have been, like, you know, a little upset.
This isn't substantial to my blackness for y'all to call this the minstrel show.
That might be T.I. Well, I thought T.I. I honestly thought T.I.
You know what? I didn't know back then when they were saying appearing in blackface is Joe Scott. Yeah, it made sense. Well, I was like, okay, now it makes sense.
Appearing in blackface.
You know, once again, just being a fan, I'm glad I'm able to hear this story. A part of me was like, I wonder if maybe when Ninth gets to tell his story, how things will line up. You know, but at the same time, the little bit of interaction I had with Ninth, when he was here, first of all, in retrospect, knowing all this, I'm surprised we got Ninth down here to be around all these people.
You know what?
He wasn't, but he was very welcoming
after his set.
Yeah,
I will give him that. He was very welcoming and signed stuff and was talking to people and was open to conversation.
He is a college professor too.
Yeah, so. But something tells me, like, you know, because I was like, well, maybe he want to tell, but something tells me he's not going to tell his story.
Yeah,
he's just going to keep, you know, he's going to just keep it moving.
This is not the time to ask him.
He's going to write a book about it later.
Yeah,
and he probably won't even address it other than just read the book.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, now there are things that kind of make more sense to me. I remember, you know, when Fonte was here with Yazara at the Jazz Kitchen, like, he really, this is when, you know, he really didn't want to hear he didn't want to hear any Little Brother music. He was at that point, he was done with it. As far as he was concerned, he was, you know, promoting Yazara and a member of the Foreign Exchange and a solo artist. Little Brother was over for him.
That's because he said too, he was like, when he made $25,000 in a month off Foreign Exchange, and that was more than he had made
through the Atlantic system.
Through the whole Atlantic system, other than like touring and stuff like that. But yeah, I would have been done with it too. And it's funny because he was talking about how Pooh really wanted the record deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder
him and Big Dope.
I wonder where the disconnect was between those two, with him explaining,
Pooh just hadn't seen it. Pooh just didn't have the experience that Fonte had with Nicolay. Mm-hmm. Fonte and Nicolay were straight independent.
Right.
Released that first project. They saw, Fonte was able to see how you can reach people without a label system. Because you got to remember, at the time, everybody was on a label.
And everybody was like, yeah, I just got to get signed.
Just got to get signed, you know, and then Pooh hadn't seen it.
But it's like I guess I'm trying to understand how he couldn't explain it to him that, look, in real time, this is how much I'm just made off of our foreign exchange project.
So
it might have been bad communication. It might just have been like, man, you just listen to me. I know, you know, like, who knows, you know.
I mean, like,
if somebody is so gung ho,
and Fonte was very, as much as Pooh, not to cut you up, but Pooh was as adamant of wanting to find a deal. Fonte was not signing a deal.
That's what I was about to say. Pooh was so far on the other side of, we have to have a deal. Yeah. We got to go through the major label system. So I could see.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because
I wouldn't know either.
Fonte is, he seems like he's the go-getter, that more outgoing person anyway. So him being that naturally and soaking up game from the foreign exchange experience, he's going to come back wired. Like, why are we doing this?
Yeah, this is a waste of time.
Look, I remember on some social media situation, because I pretty much follow Fonte on everything. And
I followed him on MySpace.
Fonte was popping on MySpace.
The reason why I even got on Twitter was because Fonte talked about it.
Yeah.
He's like, I guess I'll try this Twitter thing. I was like, what is this? And that's literally when I went and signed up.
He still got same avatar on Twitter.
He
too.
Does.
Yeah.
Shout out to Raleigh.
But the
if you know, you know.
But I just remember, like, you know, it was some questions like, you know, if you could tell your younger self something, you know, what would you tell him? He said, and his response was, the last thing you really want is a record deal.
And you see where we're at today. Because the record deal just ain't what it is.
No.
It ain't the same as it once was. And it actually hasn't been the same as it once was.
It's really not necessary. If we're being honest, it might not, as they say, could not be necessary.
Well, for the longest time, there was no way to
distribute.
Break through.
Yeah.
There was no way to reach the amount of people without having that big system behind it. Now it's shattered.
Shall we pivot?
Yep.
Okay. So let's talk Mr. Elliot Wilson. Rat Radar is Elliot Wilson.
Yes, sir.
Shout out to Lone. Lone tossed this one there. I got this one. So I feel like Elliot Wilson might have been in his feelings. When
Hell
he,
yeah.
Just a tad. He may have been in his feelings when he posted. There's a CBS interview with Three Stacks. You know, he's making his rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a screenshot of him being interviewed. And Elliot Wilson tweets, hip hop journalism. Now, I took that as, and Lone alluded to it in Discord, man might be in his feelings because Dre is not making his rounds to hip hop locations, Breakfast Club, Nori, and FN, and
same thing
Gilly
that we pretty much talked about with Kendrick and Tyler.
Right, when we talked about Cole and what.
Yeah.
So, does Three Stacks owe us interviews from a hip hop standpoint?
This isn't a hip hop project.
Thank you.
If from one angle, right, when we think back to Tyler, when he spoke out about the Grammys and him being in the hip hop category and him winning stuff when he wasn't necessarily doing hip hop, it should go both ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if Andre is not putting out a hip hop project, surely black people can make more music than just hip hop, right?
This is true.
Absolutely.
So I don't know. I mean, I guess there's definitely the argument that he's a staple of hip hop, right? You can make that argument and he should come and talk, but he didn't drop a hip hop album.
He didn't.
At all. Not even close.
No, thank you.
I would much rather hear a Andre 3000 interview on NPR at this point in time.
I would too. I mean, I think that would be interesting because they talk soft too. And it's like,
What'd you say, Lone?
It's like a quiet storm.
What was your actual inspiration when you missed so many notes in a row?
And then you know what? They'll actually have the flute playing in the background.
Yeah.
I don't think you hit the nail on the head, Lone.
That's just where my mind went when I saw him say that. It seemed like he was in his feelings a little bit because I understand the aspect of wanting to push major hip hop faces to come to hip hop media so that hip hop media gets just as much shine as, let's say, the major corporate interests in that manner.
Let's not be foolish. Hip hop benefits if Dre does the tour that we're talking about.
For sure.
Right. We know that, right?
But he's also going to get a bunch of questions. Way more questions he probably wants to deal with
that have nothing to do with this album,
and just about like, yeah, so you got any raps? You
know, yeah, like, he probably doesn't want to.
I know you're ready to rap, man. I know you got something tucked away.
Exactly. That's
so on wheels of steel. Remember when you said no?
No, yeah. I don't want to. He clearly doesn't want to talk about that.
And this is the thing. You're under the assumption that Andre 3000 has any idea what Rap Radar, what's going on as far as the Joe Budden. You understand? Andre may not even know who these people are. It sounds crazy, but like, you know, he's been literally on this flute journey, you know, on some Legend of Zelda-ish for like years now. He's not paying any. Like, there are certain people who, like, all they do is pay attention to what's going on, if you will. We do it to a certain extent because sometimes it comes up and we have to talk about it.
Right.
But Andre 3000, like, he liked to go to laundromats and walk through the forest and play. He is not getting on to these platforms.
You know what, though?
Every day to wonder, hey, what are they talking about? Wonder what's going on with the YSL trial. He doesn't care.
He openly
says that I'm not hip.
Yeah.
So, does he have a responsibility to hip hop?
He's fulfilled his responsibility.
Yes, exactly. He's gone above and beyond his responsibility to hip hop.
Yeah. But because that, to me, that's the only argument you can have here.
He's fulfilled his responsibility.
That's the only argument Elliot Wilson, who, I mean, granted, he just said like three words, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, that's
the only.
You know
what that meant.
Yeah, for sure. We all know what that meant.
We know what that meant.
But that's the only potential argument is like, oh, well, he's not doing enough to bring hip hop up that he could be doing.
Isn't that coming from a selfish place when you say he isn't doing enough or doing his due diligence or what he owes the culture of hip hop that's quote unquote like that he's done so well in?
Well,
I think we want that. Sometimes we want that. I'm using myself as a fan now. I'm not talking about being a publication. I think it's easy for us to say that, man, he owes it to the game to do this, and this.
He doesn't owe the game.
I don't think he owes anything.
Sometimes people will say, well, he has the privilege to not have to go that route. And sometimes they will use that saying of because he has that privilege to bring him
down. As an argument.
Privilege isn't always a bad thing.
I mean, he has the privilege of being Andre 3000 because he made Andre 3000.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's literally paid his dues, so to speak. I mean,
nobody
got a song called "Paid My Dues" with A-Ball MJG.
A-Ball MJG. Yep.
I mean, they did this long time ago. There's nothing else that needs to be done. Either it be Andre Benjamin or Big Boy. It doesn't. No, they don't win. They don't owe the game nothing.
And in my mind, there's always a play on the back end in this content era. Yeah, the narrative is he may owe us. He owes hip hop. He may owe hip hop this, owe hip hop that, but. Come on, man. In the back of your mind, you're thinking this will do well for my podcast or my whatever.
What about,
you know what I'm saying?
What about uplifting, or not even necessarily uplifting? What about just putting light on black entertainment media in that manner?
I mean, he sat down with Gayle King. He could have sat down with, I don't know who else is on CBS. I was going to say Charlie Rose, but he'd been gone.
I think he did talk to.
And GQ is just definitely not. Yeah, a hip hop or sure. cultural outlet.
I think we all have hit it on the head from a standpoint of the line of questioning. I don't see it being about his journey to get to where he is now and the project that he put out. I see ATLian's questions. I see, so where are the raps? I see, do you ever feel like rapping again? I see a lot of the stuff that he probably just does not want to deal with. Because there's no way you can get Andre 3000 in front of you and not ask those questions. I don't care what album you put out.
Dre is essentially kind of the same type of person that rapper Big Pooh is, in a sense. He's just more eccentric as far as, like, my style and me kind of speaks right. to you, but I don't necessarily want to speak to you or be seen at these events. That's why their last tour for the 25th anniversary of their first album was a big deal, because he was like, this is my last time touring. I don't feel comfortable doing this.
Right.
But I feel like this... I owe to y'all. And after I do this, I'm going to bow out. And that was it. So, I mean,
we already knew
where he was at with it, right?
Yeah.
And he came out every night in a jumper that had a different saying on the back.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, he expresses himself in that way, in that manner. But he doesn't want to be around everybody like
that. Did you hear the story about Prince calling him after the first performance?
So
he said after the first performance on that tour you're talking about, Prince called him and was like, y'all don't understand how big y'all are.
But he's
critiquing the show, like, y'all don't understand how big y'all are. Y'all are not taking this for what it really is.
Well, Andre also said that in that same interview that he wasn't maybe mentally prepared for what was going on. He was like, oh wow, he's like, well, we're using these headsets, I've never used this before, you know, like. So,
well, shout out to Stacks, man. You don't have to do anything for
but
me,
if you'd
bro.
Like to come and sit down with
you
old
come
heads.
Sit down with us now.
You know, we don't even do interviews, but if you want to come, we'll talk about flute music and
no, we won't.
Okay, all right, no, we won't.
Yeah, we will.
You can bring the flute.
Yeah, we will.
You can bring the flute.
We're gonna ask you questions,
Big Boy. If you want to come down here and talk about owls, we'll get down with all that legend.
We're gonna ask the owls and Big Boy doing lobster tails and all that. Yeah. We're gonna ask about all that. Hey, Long, can we shout out our partners, my friend?
Sure. Thanks to our partners. Dr. Coleman of Coleman Dental is our go-to dentist. He's a longtime Indianapolis arts and music supporter located right in Broad Ripple. Printfinity is a screen printing shop based in Indianapolis, owned and operated by our own DJ J Diff. Our good friends at Indy CD and Vinyl operate one of the best record stores in North America. Shop new and used in their site or visit them in person. And the best way to support the new old heads is to visit our Patreon and become a member for as little as $3 a month. All details on newoldheads.com.
You got to talk, not me.
You just got to look at him spice. What's going on, man? You all right?
I kind of blanked out a little bit.
Yeah, that Luther creeping in?
No, don't speak that. We ain't speak that.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome back to the new OS podcast.
Yeah.
My name is Sean.
I like turtles.
Hey, Sean.
How's it going?
Oh yeah, I forgot to mention too that Big Crit dropped a song or something.
He did?
Yeah,
did
he did.
But you have to
go to this particular website.
Oh, he on that Most Def?
And it's a pay it's a pay what you want though. It's a pay what you want.
Kind of like an In Rainbow situation.
Yeah, some Radiohead stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I don't
You know what I'm not mad
I
at
fool
that.
With Crit,
I'm
though.
Not mad at that either.
You know, cuz just like I could have watched the Little Brother documentary for free. Mm-hmm. But I was like,
that's the best model.
Because I'm honestly, you know what? Considering we ask people to become Patreons.
You're right.
So I said, that's part of what I said. Let me just go ahead and give these folks. If it was in the movie theater, I would have gone to see it in the movie theater. It would have cost me $10.
Excuse me, brother. Patrons.
Patreon.
Patrons on Patreon.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah. Just you know.
Yeah.
But when you call them Patreons, it makes it a little bit more specific.
Yeah.
And he's like, because you can be a patron of the show and not be on Patreon.
Yeah.
But so, we prefer Patreon because that's the number one best way to support
so
us.
So are we going
to
call our patrons Patreons?
We call them new old heads. We
call them patriotic because...
If you become a $3 member, you become a new old head. That's what happens. Come be a new old head.
Rock with your boy. Rock with your kid.
And I started it last week, so I don't know who all saw it, but we've slowly been like, I think last year's when I started putting like the full episode, the full live thing on there. Patreon now allows us to upload video. So last week was the first week of the full Uncut version is on Patreon. So
you get that uncut version is the one you really want to get. That's the one.
$3 Patreon. That's the support us.
That's that what that thing smell like version.
Yeah, that's that beat. That's that uncut for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
that tip drill version.
That's
what that thing smell like is classic. I think it's.
Is it?
I was leaning more towards like Mighty Casey White Girls, but I guess that works too.
The only thing that was classic about what that thing smelled like,
the hook was fire,
was that it was shot at the Mecca, and the Mecca was one of my favorite clubs back in the day.
Listen, man.
For those that don't know.
What?
Yeah,
don't tell Minister Farrakhan. He don't want to know what's going on.
Hey, man.
And shout out to that busy bond joint.
Which
is a bail bondsman.
Yeah.
I hate long, man.
But you know what? That song wound up being in the movie White Girls. So shout out to the Mighty Casey for getting a placement.
That's Mighty Casey, man. BT Uncut worked for him.
I'm telling you.
Kind of.
What was the name of that song? You can get the lap dance for free.
It's called Lap Dance.
Lap Dance, yeah.
Hmm. Well, and there was honestly, What Means the World to Me, like that's
with,
like Cameron.
Yeah,
that's where that video was played. Hey,
that was the cut. That was one of the most heavily bootlegged albums before it actually came out. Because if you remember, that ESPN album came out. I mean,
or what, SDE. Sex, Drugs, Entertainment. Because they tried to use like something that looked like the NBA logo, and mm-hmm. NBA was like, no.
Yeah, but that album, that the bootleg version of that album was out like probably 6 months to a year before that album.
Look, there was a bootleg of that I got. Didn't even have no Cameron raps on it.
Wow.
It was bad.
That was the LimeWire version.
I hated him. Man, we were taking him off of here.
I was like, who is this rapping? That's crazy. This is not Cameron.
That was one of the diplomats. One of the long-lost diplomats.
Yeah, so...
Boiling hot water. When I'm boiling hot water. When I boil the hot water.
That's how Jules Santana rap.
My cousin gonna tell me.
How do y'all feel about them saying that Jules Santana was supposed to be like
bigger,
a Jay-Z type of person?
That might be one of the dumbest comments
he was on his
heard.
Way. I mean, on his Jay-Z.
On his way to where?
No, but Jules Santana, his first couple records.
He on was, his way to where?
He was on his way to doing a lot better than what we see him at now.
Man. We gonna jump right to Jay-Z, though?
Okay, that's doing a lot.
You know how many people you skipped over? You could have been like, yeah, he was on his way to be Ja Rule.
Maybe he was on his way to be... Fabulous. I don't know.
Yeah, so yeah.
What the game's been missing has some heat.
Man, J.R. Ryder was the best thing smoking on the Diplomats. So if they wasn't pushing J.R. Ryder, then I don't know what to tell you because, yeah, Jules Santana wasn't that dude like that.
Come on, Jay.
His raps was cool.
You got to start telling the truth
now. But I just can't see. I can't see the Jay-Z guy.
Come on, Long.
No, not Jay-Z, though. Like, let's not jump out the window.
Nah, that's
jumping out the window.
That's wild.
You got to pick somebody like, prize or
Memphis
something.
Bleak.
Nah, I'm going to give you more
than prize.
No, I
ain't going to disrespect him.
That's why I said Ja Rule actually had hits.
You can say
what it about you want, but Ja Rule had hits.
Those first two Jules Santana records set him up nicely, you know, to have some longevity in this game.
Yeah. To be Ja Rule-ish. Not Jay-Z.
He just wasn't sing songs.
More Memphis Bleak. Come on.
It might be bad.
Nah, he was better than Memphis Bleak.
Was he?
Memphis Bleak's second solo album actually was pretty decent. The one where he had to sing it with T.I.
I've just never been impressed with
Who
Jules
was that?
Santana.
Trick Daddy? Was that Trick Daddy on that joint? Okay.
I'm with Lone.
No, there were some joints on that second Memphis Bleak album.
Let me know in the comments.
It had Dear Summer at the end of it.
No, that was on 4 5 6.
Okay, what was on that album at the end?
Which I don't know.
Nobody knows.
All right, never mind.
Look, y'all let me know in the chat. Bleak is nicer than Jules Santana. That's my vote.
I've never understood the Jewel Santana love. I've just never got it.
I like that.
I just don't get it.
That Bleak and Beans little era was dope, though. Mm-hmm. They should have definitely came out with an album.
Yeah.
Bleak is a better rapper than Jewel Santana.
Oh, I agree to that.
Yeah, I do agree with that. You're right.
I think Drag On.
He just didn't have any singles.
I spit these bars to mid to the
What's
bed
up,
break.
Man?
Hey. Shout out to Drag On.
Shout out to Drag On.
I'm actually being serious.
No, like he randomly follows me on Instagram, and I was like, "Is this the real Drag On?"
Is Lotta Dark Man nicer than Jewel Santana?
I don't. I couldn't tell you nothing about the law.
See, Lone is honest.
He is.
He's honest.
So is Street Life.
Thank you.
Yeah, Street Life.
He's honest.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I get that.
Thank you for being honest.
There's
bro.
A lot of MCs that Street Life is better than though.
That's true. That's true. Street Life was one of those guys where I always felt like he should have been.
Come on,
higher.
Man. Come on.
He went nuts.
He could have been the 11th
on that second Tical album.
Yeah.
Street Life was all over that
God.
Record.
He Judgment went nuts
Day.
On there.
Judgment Day.
Yeah, he went nuts.
Was he on the record Spazola? I just remember I really liked that record. Like, he it didn't been do what it was supposed to do.
He had a solo song on there, too.
Yeah.
He do nice, though. I ain't going to hold you. Nice.
Yeah, these are all rappers that are better than Jewel Santana. Yeah.
I can't wait to see the comments for this one. I'm standing on that. I'm sorry.
There's a lot of Jewel's fans. So,
yeah.
Hey, listen, you can't tell the story of hip hop without mentioning Dipset. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I think you kind of can.
No, you can't.
I mean, it was a movement.
That was a movement. That was a nice error. I mean, it gave the street guys the
Come on, man.
The comfortability, which isn't even a word, to wear pink and have a pink next tail chirp and all that stuff.
Anybody that knows me know that I've had multiple arguments about Dipset. My best friends love Dipset, but I'm not about to sit here and lie and say that they don't have a chapter in hip hop. Dipset has a whole chapter, and they had a wave, however long y'all want to call it, but you have to mention they wave.
And J.R. Ryder was you the have best to artist out of that whole crew. And they didn't
Is that fair alone in terms of Dipset with the wave? They had a their yeah, wave did. Has they to
did.
Be mentioned.
You can't. Yeah, they did. There's a lot of people that I think my real take is that the bunch of people that don't really care about the bars as much as they care about the beats. But that's just what I'm saying.
See, he gonna get me going now.
Well, this kind of goes back to the era when Lil Brother was supposed to pop, because that's what was going on.
We're just paying too much attention to the oversized jerseys and NBA patch jackets to realize, yo, this group over here is
I have this along what you just said raised my blood pressure. I have this argument once a year. Once a year with Andrew Barber, shout out to my homie Andrew Barber, Fake Show Drive, about the pie chart for Dipset. It's 80-20 production over lyrics. We argue about this once a year every year.
And when they weren't getting those Just Blaze beats,
bruh,
what happened?
I'm just saying, the Heatmakers was lacing.
Heatmakers were definitely giving them
Dipset.
That was their.
That's all. I'm not saying everybody's trash. That's not what I'm saying. But that was what I went for. Was the production?
We seen what happened. When they went up again, in the versus battle.
Because I'm one of those people. I'll say it out loud. I thought Dipset was going to wash.
I think everybody thought Dipset was going to wash them. The production, like it comes down to the production. But
Kiss did his thing.
Yeah, but
Kiss
the
was commanding that audience.
Yeah, once Kiss started actually rapping, it was over.
Yeah.
All right,
because he had the scale that they whale the whales with.
Yeah.
Bathtub flip up.
Somebody was like, in our comments, just real quick, somebody was like, it wasn't overly prevalent that we were talking, like, we didn't come out and say, like, oh, this is a Jadakiss bar, you know, like, because we were talking about somebody else at the time. They're like, that's a Jadakiss bar, not a whoever. And we're like,
oh, yeah, they do that
a lot.
Yeah.
We know. Yeah. Did you not hear us quote, like, half the song? Like, we know.
They swear that we don't know what we're talking about.
Like, it's like, we know it's Fat Joe.
Wild. I mean, the name of the show is The New Old Head. So, I mean, we are privy to what's going on in today's day and times.
We're also
But we all kind of are seasoned a little bit. You know what I'm saying? There's a little gray in our beards and our hairs. And some of us don't have hair.
Back when I was cutting my first grass back then. I don't know what that means.
Cutting my first grass.
Did you try to get off some drum bars?
Did you use a knife? You're just cutting a blade at a time?
Yeah.
All right.
That's how I used to cut my blade. I used to cut my grass with scissors just to freak my neighbors out so they'd leave me alone.
I really hate lawn, man. Y'all have no idea how much I hate Lowell.
Like, somebody be like, that boy ain't right.
I'm going to leave him alone.
That's exactly
what I want.
That crazy boy is out front again cutting his grass with his scissors. I have a question for you, gentlemen. We talk about the Grammys and how everyone, we stopped doing the Grammy lists and the nominations and all this stuff. We stopped doing that. I have to ask, is there a level of importance with Killer Mike being nominated in terms of him actually winning this album? Would that do anything to change or shift anything in the culture if this particular album wins Best Rap Album of the Year? Is there any importance associated with this?
Because well, I'd be happy for him, but no.
So tell me why.
Turn into a trend. It would have to happen like this for like 5 years in a row or something.
So what you're saying is the trend from the Grammys moving forward, them respecting...
The Grammys are known for overcorrecting.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So is this, if they consistently get it right, then I would say maybe, but at the same time...
They
won't
because the board is kind of the same as politics. They have the same people on the board that are older and have been a part of this board forever, or people that have paid to have this position. So a lot of them aren't hip, so to speak.
A lot of them are, though. A lot of them are.
I think probably more aren't.
I mean, we actually know some people that are associated with the Grammy board.
A few.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You know, so
I think, isn't Ad 2 a part of it?
Ad 2's a part of it. Yeah. Andrew Barber's a part of it. Yeah.
But the thing about that is, if there's more that aren't a part of it, then that kind of...
Because people from
silences them. It makes their vote get lost in the shuffle.
I mean, at the end of the day, no, I don't think the Grammys matter at all. I don't think any award show really matters at all. That's where I really stand. But
you know why it matters?
But from a significant standpoint, I think if they continue to get it right over a long period of time, I think then maybe it can start to maybe gain some credibility.
What I'm taking from you is we don't want it to be the album of the year where they just throw him a bone and it goes right back to the trends.
I don't care. I just, like, at this point, like, they haven't been consistent for so long. I don't care. Like, it would be cool if he won because I think he should win.
But that's where it stops.
The end.
Okay. Once again, it'd be cool if he won, but, you know, some of our greatest hip hop heroes, not only have they never won a Grammy, they've never even been nominated. Yeah. Gangstar, no nominations. Pete Rock and CL Smooth, no nominations. You know what I'm saying? Tupac, no wins. Notorious B.I.G., no wins.
So what I'm taking.
Even in death, they didn't give him a win.
I mean, Nas just got what? For the first time, like
30 years in. They finally give him a.
Snoop still ain't got one.
Snoop still doesn't have one. So what really, I mean, it's nice. Don't get me wrong. There are people who have Grammys. I'm glad they got them.
Yeah,
you know, I'm glad that you're the Diggable Planets one.
Right.
That they can still say Grammy Award winning.
Yep.
Diggable Planets. But, you know, Black Star, no Grammy. Tribe Called Quest, no Grammys. De La Soul, no Grammys. Okay. This doesn't really shape how we
Bubba
feel.
Bubba Sparks, no Grammys.
This Beastie Boys, no Grammys. You know what I'm saying? No nominee. Well, I take that back. I think they did win. I take that back.
They won for Intergalactic.
No, yeah. But they won for stuff where it's like, okay, that's great, but what about this over here that they should have won for?
So what
Andre's gonna win hip hop album of the year?
That's the whole
year.
Thing. It's something about doubling back, though. It's almost like they always have to double back because I mean, everybody knows what happened when Macklemore won. Macklemore even stated
he said it.
And what happened after that? The Grammys were like, okay, we can't mess this up again. So basically, Kendrick has won every Grammy he's been nominated for.
And now
since
he's
then.
In the Smithsonian.
Yeah. So I mean, what? As a fan of Killer Mike, as somebody who I've listened to this particular album more than I have any other album, you know, it is my album of the year. I can't even put together a full top 10 list. Like, that's how, I mean, there's been some good records, but like, as far as what's really kept my attention.
10 of them, yeah. I'm with you when you're right.
It's hard. Like, usually I come out with my 10 and then some honorable mentions, but it's really been all about
Michael. I'm not going to hold you. Michael, by far, is my favorite record of the year, but Doja Cat snapped. I was more impressed than I thought I would be, man. It's some heat on there. And I never thought I'd be that person.
We talked about Paint the Town Red and a couple other records.
She has some more heat on there that I was not aware of. But it's still Michael, though.
Come on now.
So the reason I'm asking is because, and what I'm taking from everybody's conversation is, as fans, we would love to see him win, but the actual impact of it,
In a streaming era,
you know, it's not going to be.
You know, I mean, it'd be nice. I don't know. And once again, I'm not sure if they are, you know, say he won and they actually, he gets to actually accept on stage, that might be the only difference it makes.
Is that where the impact comes
that's
in?
That's where the impact comes in. Maybe.
What do you think, Long? Maybe.
But, you know, if he gets
on there and wins and announces that he's running for president.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, at this point, the people who we consider to be legends, the people who we really respect as hip hop artists, the Grammy thing is nice. I was, you know, like I said, I still have to watch the rest of the Grammy tribute to hip hop. You know, the parts I've seen are great. But, you know, the most of the people up on that stage have never won anything.
You're right.
You know, I mean, they're doing a tribute. They're doing a tribute with people who have been ignored by the Academy during most of the time that they've been nominated in hip hop records.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I think the only thing about it is with this Killer Mike album, I feel like people that probably didn't think they were going to like the Killer Mike album really enjoy it, because across the board, I'm hearing anybody that's listened to that album says this is the best album I've heard this year. And these are even people that may not listen to this said style of hip hop. Mm-hmm. It's just how good it is. Now, if it wins, it's a testament of people that actually rock with hip hop.
Yeah.
Actually being the influence and the ones that made it make sense for them to win, for him to win.
Right.
But the status quo would probably push Doja Cat, because that's who's more popular than Killer Mike as far as musically is concerned.
Right. And also, you know, the people who vote are outside, like, you know, because there are people who are country, who are rock, who are pop, right, whatever. Right. They vote too.
Right.
Okay. And a lot of times I feel like their vote is like, oh, yeah, who's that guy that my kids like? Yeah. Or who's that girl? You know, it's like, oh, they've probably been hearing Paint the Town Red everywhere gone for the last 6 months.
Yes.
And so, like, Michael has a, you know, or Killer Mike, I'm looking at the record.
Yeah.
Just calling him Michael. As
artwork is fire.
You have to, if you have to be somebody who has actually said, I'm going to sit down and listen to this record, if you're going to hear any of the songs, you know, any of the video clips, like, you're not going to hear this at the grocery store or at the club or any of the places where you might, just by osmosis, hear a certain person's record. You know, so I think that's where but at the same time, because King's Disease won, you know, before, you know, a few years ago, this is something, this might be the dark horse, like King's Disease 2 or 3, rather. Whichever the one that has the Lauryn Hill record.
2.
That's 3.
No, that's 2.
Is that 2?
I can't remember.
It's 2.
One of them is
3 is the one that just came out.
You're right. I stand corrected. He's right.
Or is that Magic 3?
Magic 3. You're right. Magic
3. No, so it's
there's 3 Magics.
See? Lost in the sauce.
I think he's right about 2, though. I think
King's Disease, either 2 or 3 is nominated as well. But, you know, once you get that first Grammy, it's like, oh, okay. And you start looking at it, and you start looking at, sometimes they just go look at the composers, and if they see Lauryn Hill's name, they're just like, oh, yeah, Lauryn Hill?
She got one.
Yeah, let's go ahead and go ahead and vote for this. You know, so like I said, I feel like Michael should win, but probably won't.
Okay. Would you be surprised if it didn't?
Would be surprised if it did.
Exactly.
I would be surprised if it did as well.
But even if it wins, it's a bunch of people who don't know what they're talking about trying to seem cool.
I want him to win and be able to get up there and talk that talk.
Because honestly, if they're not gonna televise the winner of Best Hip Hop, which they, for whatever reason, just don't like to do, even though hip hop, well, not this year, but the previous years has driven the music industry, then I don't care. Like, if it's an opportunity, if he's here, Killer Mike on national TV,
I would
do his thing.
I would just be
and cool tell with and him tell performing. The people to stop playing the music.
I would be cool with him performing. I would be
cool with him performing too.
On that stage.
I would.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with it, but. I bet you Jelly Roll wins a country award.
I bet you he does.
Yeah.
Shout out to Jelly Roll.
Straight up.
It's probably going to be Doja and Jelly Roll.
Doja and Jelly Roll, you think?
Doja and Jelly Roll. And,
probably Adele and
Taylor Swift.
Definitely Beck.
Taylor Swift has got the...
Beck going to be in there regardless, ain't he, Long?
Beck is always in there, and you never hear about the album even dropping.
Until after he won.
Yeah.
That's how great he is.
Hey. Kanye West and Ty Dolla $ign are about to drop an album Friday, right? So they drop. Okay.
Hey, we're in the same boat.
Listen, because I feel the same way about what I'm about to tell you.
Got you.
So they sampled the Backstreet Boys, Backstreet's Back.
Yeah. All right. What?
And people are talking about how good this is. I'm like, lazy. This is trash.
Yo, is that like what we are?
I'm not here to be riding around bumping.
Meow.
Wait. They took the Backstreet back.
All right. They flipped that into something. And the way people are acting about this flip,
nah, man,
is you've heard ridiculous.
This long? Is it Backstreet's Back or Larger Than Life?
It's Backstreet's Back.
Either one. It doesn't matter. Either one.
I heard 5 second clip and I was like, oh, another thing. Like, what is popular? No, trash, man. So lazy.
It's so trash. One of my homies shared it on his story or feed, and fault. I was like, yeah, this is not John Blaze, man.
Lone, elaborate on what you're talking about when you're saying it's trash. Just so the people that just
it's on, just man. Lazy, man. I don't know.
Were you checking for that song when it came out? And I'm not even saying that as a producer,
right?
Like when you heard that. Mm-hmm. As a producer, you wasn't like, I'm going to sample that.
I'm going to tell you a real story. I had a really close friend, and him and this other guy started hanging out, and they started listening to Backstreet Boys, and I stopped talking to him.
See, that's why I like you, man.
He's not lying, though.
I'm dead serious.
He's not lying.
I believe it.
He's not lying.
I remember,
what are you doing driving around in your Corsica with these sunglasses on listening to Backstreet Boys?
Driving around in their what?
Yeah, man.
It's like, stop it.
They wanted to be in a boy band.
He's not lying.
Stop it.
They probably used to wear puka shells too, huh?
Yes.
Yep. Sounds about right.
Actually, not the whole time, but they found their way to him.
Yeah. The sad part about it is, I believe I know who he's
talking
about.
You probably know what I'm talking about. I don't have no ill will towards him or anything like that, but
it's just lost.
I was like, okay, I'm not going to be driving to Muncie with y'all listening to Backstreet Boys. I'm not doing it.
Backstreet's
not
back.
Doing
all
it.
All right. He's banging at his car. Imagine somebody pulling up banging that.
Y'all got me wanting to hear this now just so I can laugh.
No, man. No. Oh, man.
No, I mean, you know, Lockstar sent it to me and I was like, you got to be kidding.
It's lazy because it on multiple accounts. Number one, it's
Kanye.
Yes, but he's taking something that's already popular and known.
Okay.
That should never be used like this, mm-hmm. and flipping it that way for the popularity aspect of it. So there's
he didn't
you can say
it.
There's genius in it if you
no,
want.
There's no somebody's going that. To say there's that there's no genius
in that.
There is no if. It's going to be said.
But all that they've been doing, and you guys say it's Hitmaker that's been doing this, but a lot of these songs are literally just loops.
It's the trend, period.
Loops
I
of
just
these
use
songs
him as
and
an
just
example.
And then just drums over it. It's just it's so corny, man. And like you're just looping. It's not produced. I don't know. I guess is it producing a record?
It damn hurts my heart, man, because to see it go this way.
I'm
not trying to be the old guy in the room.
Sometimes you have to,
but I don't really care.
Sometimes
you got to be the realist.
Sometimes you got to be the old guy. And what you're talking about, what you're saying is absolutely correct. And from the producer standpoint, you talk about is it production? The producer that really eats is the person that's being sampled because of how much they take of it.
If you sample Backstreet Boys, you're paying like 90 people.
Your publishing is gone if you sample that.
They didn't even give them the okay or the green light on that joint.
Well, they know, but see, Backstreet Boys would know. We about to get paid.
No, they're not. They didn't own any of that stuff.
You're right. I take that back.
It wasn't Ron Perlman, was
it's
it?
It's like John Charles.
Y'all are right.
Elliot.
Not Ron Perlman. That's who was. That was Hellboy.
That's NSYNC.
Yeah, I was wrong. You're right. You guys are right.
I know who you're talking about. He's dead now. He died in prison.
It's a whole bunch of people that nobody's heard of.
Yeah.
Whoever that estate is or whatever is about.
At least sample the stuff that Full Force did for him.
Nah, for real.
Yeah, pay Full Force.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, nah, man. It's just lazy.
But I'm with you, Long. I'm with you 100%.
If y'all like it, that's cool. But it's lazy to me.
Yeah, because you remember.
I teach it. I've been teaching this stuff for 7 years now.
Because y'all
have been a producer for 20 years. I feel like I have the authority to say it's lazy.
You do.
So
it's like, remember.
I don't think anybody can check you for saying it is lazy.
You know?
But I haven't produced it all, and I'm like, this is lazy.
You remember the wreck.
People always like to come at me, though.
What's the Mace joint? I'm showing my age.
Been around the world, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, take kids from the 80s, yeah, yeah. But what was that in? More Money, not More Money.
No, that was it was on Money Talks initially, but then was on his.
You know the record I'm talking about.
Yeah.
He did. Puffy used to do that. I'm about to take the whole joint and just turn it into something and just ride the wave.
Modern day
feels so good.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's just modern Puffy. It's really what it is.
Modern Puffy.
And we all looked at Puffy a very specific way for what he was doing. It was like, all right, cool. Yeah, you got these big hits, but. Doesn't mean that you're like a Pete Rock out here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Rick Rubin talking about the audience comes last as it relates to how records are you know, put together and how he approaches records caught me off guard. I didn't think about it, but I think that I actually agree with him. So let's listen to the audio and listen to him explain it, and then we can kind of jump in and go from there.
And I believe that I'm not making it for them. I'm making it for me. And turns out that when you make something truly for yourself, you're doing the best thing you possibly can for the audience. Mm. So much of why, if you go to the movies, so many big movies just not good. It's because they're not being made by a person who cares about it. They're being made by people who are trying to make something that they think someone else is going to like. And that's not how art works. Art doesn't, that's something else. It's not art. That's commerce. Mm-hmm. So if we're making art, we're making, it's almost like a diary entry. So could I be concerned that someone else might not like my diary entry? Doesn't make sense. You know, it has nothing to do with them. My diary entry has nothing to do with anyone else. So everything we make as artists are essentially diary entries.
Well, thank you, Rick, for your potent statement.
So Lone, I'm coming to you first because you are a creative. You've put out projects. You've put out projects where you really go into depth, thought, concepts, all the stuff that, you know, he kind of addressed. What do you think about him saying it's about the creative versus being about the audience?
No, I 100% agree.
Do you agree?
It's not even like a conversation that I would like. Like if somebody says that it's not, I'd be like, all right, cool. That's not why I make stuff, you know? I think you have to make stuff for yourself first. And the main reason why, I'll just kind of get to it. The main reason is because people want unique experiences in general. Mm-hmm. If they want to grow with something or somebody, sure, you can get by for a while on a persona. Mm-hmm. You can navigate that in a certain way. Jay talked about it last week and the difference between an artist and a product.
Yep.
And that's really what it comes down to. If you're like a true creative, a true artist, and your goal in this creativity that you're creating is to genuinely create something that is different and new and powerful to the world, or breaking of the world, or, you know, something to disrupt the world, or to do something in that manner, to do that, you don't pull that from a place of following.
So let me ask you this follow-up question. If someone is approaching making music strictly based off a crowd response, or, you know, the reception that they may receive, is that 100% a bad thing, or is it just a different approach from what you talked about? Just in your opinion. Now, I'm not saying it's the Bible or nothing.
I don't think anything is 100%. I don't think anything's fully black and white.
Okay.
I think you have to be conscious of what we're doing here. So to kind of make it, to make it make sense, if you want to be an artist in today's day and time, you have to, and you want to make any type of commerce off of in the culture of capitalism that we have, mm-hmm. then you have to understand what actually makes money to some degree. Right. So I think you have to do some sort of balance of it if you want to be strictly independent and you want to try to make money off of it. Now, if you just want to make art, then you can just make art to make art, and that there's nothing wrong with that. But I think there's a, depending on where you want to take it, there's a creativity involved in figuring out how to share and reach your people and your tribe in that aspect. And it's hard. It's super hard because that's not really like the intent.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's right. Like I make stuff. My thing that I tell everybody is like, I make stuff for myself and for people like me. That's it. Like if you're not like me, or you don't like the same things that I like, or you're not into the same headspace that I'm at when I'm creating things, that's cool.
This is probably not going to be for you.
Yeah, this is just me. This is what I'm making in this moment. And I can't make something for you in your moment in time. That's for you to do and you to figure out, or you to figure out what you want from somebody else. That's why.
Or maybe what you're making may apply to someone. You never know how it can be received, because it might actually apply to someone in their moment. And they might be able to relate to it.
But it doesn't matter, because I'm making my moment. I can't make somebody else's moment. So like if my moment works for somebody else, that's cool. That's the whole purpose. That's the reason why we share stuff. That's why we do this podcast. We can sit on this podcast and talk to ourselves all time and whatever, or we can get on the podcast and talk about stuff and reach the people that enjoy the things that we talk about. Mm-hmm. It's the same way, you know, gotcha. We have to balance the commerce versus the practical side of how we do things. That's why we're just not sitting in a dark room, you know, holding a microphone, making microphone sounds. You know what I mean? That's why we're conscious about topics. That's why we're conscious about the things we do, so that we can reach try to reach the people out there that want to consume the things that we put out there. So you can't just go at it. If you want to actually reach people, you can't just go at it from a strictly creative standpoint unless you have a team that can do that for you. So I agree with what Rick's saying, but Rick has a lot of like, his wisdom's like, it's introspective, but it's like obvious stuff a lot of times. It's like, oh, Rick is saying something like monumental. No, he's just saying stuff that a lot of us say, but he's just saying out loud, and he's Rick Rubin.
And so. It sounds extra deep when it comes from him.
I mean, it is deep. He does it. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's not that it's not deep or anything like that. It's just, I don't think he's this like, man, nobody thinks like Rick Rubin. No, I think exactly like Rick Rubin.
Yeah.
I just don't sit Indian style and grow my hair. Maybe I'll grow my beard out longer than
people. It doesn't hit the same because you're not Rick Rubin.
Then people will make fun of my beard.
You don't have a van with seats and
I don't. Yeah. I don't have a bus in my yard.
You don't have a
that's
harp.
A studio.
You don't have a harp.
If you had a harp,
friends with Andre 3000 who come over your house and play the flute for you.
Yeah.
If you got a harp and a bus and stuff like that, that might change it a little bit,
but it's just what it is. It's just, you know,
what you think, Jay, based off what you heard from Rick Rubin.
I understand where he's coming from, but you know what, there are people who we all enjoy who they are thinking about the audience when they make art. I'll talk about it just, you know, because I'm from that 80s era. What made Michael Jackson so great, especially on his run, when you're talking about between Off the Wall, going into Thriller, going into Bad, going into, you know, his 90s bag with Teddy Riley, is he cared a great deal about what his audience thought. Okay. And that's how he went into making records. Now, when we talk about Prince didn't care what you thought.
True.
And that's what made them both so very great. Is because Michael Jackson wanted the people who had been rocking. He cared so much about his fans. He wanted to give them what they liked.
He is emotional about it.
You know, and you see that, like, there have been three documentaries. There's one about Bad. Then there's one about Off the Wall. And I'm halfway through the one about Thriller. You know, and
I still gotta watch
the whole
that.
Concept about, you
what
know,
is
Thriller,
it on?
It's on Paramount. Paramount Plus, you know. All these streaming things are going to change very soon. Trust me.
Hope I know somebody.
And I'm just, but does that make Michael Jackson's, because of his intent, does that make his art not as good as Prince, who would make records, you know, who'd be like, look, you can't even skip some of these records if you buy the CD because I made it as one long track.
Right.
You know, when I think about a record like Alphabet Street, I was like, he did that because he wanted to do it. It worked. Because he was Prince and he had the cachet to do it. But there's absolutely no reason why a song like that should have worked because it, you know, was it rock? Was it pop? Was it hip hop? You know, there's so much going on. You know, when he says Thieves in the Temple, he's not
the Batman soundtrack.
That was for commerce.
Yeah.
I will say that. That is
that
the
was,
one.
That was for commerce.
Because, you know, at one point, people don't even realize between 78 and 92, Prince put out an album every single year.
He did.
You know, and I think the Batman soundtrack.
The one had him on the cover with his panties on.
Yeah.
Then he had 1999.
You know, I don't think he was thinking about this is how I'm going to sell this to the masses. You know, like, I really think it was like, I'm going to play every instrument. I'm going to write every song and they're either going to like it or they don't. And the thing is, and that was during his genius period where, like, we liked it a lot more than we didn't. But I say with Michael made, you know, because at one point during Thriller, he wasn't happy with how it came out. And like, there were some changes that had to be made before it, you know, I don't think if Michael had Prince's mentality, he'd have done The Girl Is Mine. Or if he'd done The Girl Is Mine, right, he would not have put Paul McCartney on it. You know, like, I really think he made. Do we love those records? I don't like The Girl Is Mine. I think I was like, how are you going to do two songs and not keep Say? But that's just me. But I, like I said, I think there is sometimes people can go to it with a different mentality. And I think, you know, when we talk about who goes into it with, I'm going to do this for me. And if you come along with me, it's cool. Or I'm going to do this for the audience because I know this is what they'll appreciate. You know, I don't think, do I look down on either approach? No. Does it resonate with me? The people who do things based on how they feel and hopefully the audience will come along with them, you know, once again, art versus product. I love Michael, and we all, you know, I feel like at a certain point he came up through the Motown machine. He studied Berry Gordy.
Yeah.
He understood what it was to create a product that was also art. But Prince came along and he was like, I am an artist. At one point, that's what I'm going to call myself. And then, and you're good. If you come along with me, cool. If you don't get thieves in the temple, it's on you.
I want Terry to jump in because you were, I know you were, you sound like you were going to say something.
No, so it was just more along the line of Michael Jackson was very polished and he knew what it took to make a project and who to use to make that project. Whereas Prince is more so the person that's making the project. Like he's playing the instruments, you know what I'm saying? He's arranging it, things of that nature. Now, Mike was doing that too, but Mike is more of an entertainer than he is a musician at the end of the day, even though he is a musician, whereas Prince is the total opposite. You know what I'm saying?
I think it's just about the intent. You know, like I said, Prince, like there's a reason why there are these gaps between Michael, especially there was a huge gap between Thriller and Bad. You know, like, you know, because he could have put out an album that next year, but, you know, he's still living on
different back then.
It was different. But, you know, like I said, it's like this crazy thing. Basically, Prince put out an album every year for 15 years. Like, it doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, my argument to that would be I see where you're coming from. But my argument would be that you always start, even Michael would start from a place of myself. First, mm-hmm. You can't get to the place where Michael's at unless you have mastered the other thing. And because like once you start factoring other people, there's no way it just becomes, I don't want to say people pleasing, becomes a way of trying to be scientific about how do I say this? I don't even know how exactly to say this. It's like when he made one album mm-hmm. that had a specific type of feel to it, his next album may have a little bit may have a different type of feel to it. So it may, even though he may get a lot of overlap and a crossover, he may lose some people within that. And there's no way to compensate realistically for that from a creative standpoint.
Right.
Because can't really gauge that. You can't really gauge people. And it's really hard. Like Michael Jackson and Prince are like these extreme examples, obviously.
Yeah.
But one thing that they both had going for them was the fact that they were both super successful and both super popular.
And they're both otherworldly talented as well.
For sure.
I think Mike was more strategic in what he was doing. It's almost like he found a pocket and he exploited that pocket. He knew what to do, even though it wasn't the same thing all the time, but he knew how to get to people and what they wanted to hear, so to speak.
He's trying to make, it's like you say, he's trying to make specific songs. Like that's the intent. It's like the difference between trying, like going that pop route. You know, like Michael Jackson was a type of artist that regardless, after a while, like pretty much anything he put out was probably going to be super popular. You know, it didn't really matter what it was. So I don't know. I don't think there's anything wrong with like, to me, that's just what I was saying when I was saying like you cater to, you have to balance it a little bit. You have to be able to balance like how you reach people. And that's just the most extreme example is Michael Jackson. And he's got all the resources to do all that. Right.
Right.
He's literally the best example for that. So he can do that. And I'm guessing, you know, everybody has that. And nowadays it's the same thing, except we're talking about algorithms and we're talking about how we create content and we're talking about, you know, how we come across in the content, you know, and all those other different things. So it's like, it's the same thing as it's always been. But when you just take away the people completely and you can just create, and then the people fall where they do, I think it's,
we still have artists that excel in that model. Mr. Morale, that is the epitome of album where it's like, this is what I'm feeling. We're going to put it out there and just live with the results. Like, you got records in there. They snuck records in there that were supposed to be what you're talking about with the balance. But as a whole, that project to me was, this is where I'm at, and I'm just going to put it out here. Just deal with it.
But just think about how much Kendrick had to do to get to that point.
But I also...
Yeah,
I think too, though, I think sometimes, like, I think that the process is just intertwined. When I think about albums that I made that were, like, super themed,
mm-hmm.
like when I did Love Redefined,
mm-hmm.
when I was making that process, sure, I wasn't like, oh man, this one's going to work here or this one's going to do this. But what I was thinking in the back of my mind is like, it would be cool to introduce this type of sound to maybe reflect this particular style or part of me.
Yeah.
And maybe that particular part of me is something that is a little bit more upbeat. It is a little bit more of this over here. It is a little bit something that may work with these people over here, but it's not intentional in the sense of like, It's not like I'm going to make this type of record. It's like, no, I'm going to utilize these tools to make something that might encapsulate. I know it's a very nuanced conversation.
So you don't deviate from yourself. It's still authentic. It's just, it's a different variation. It's a different version of you. Is that?
Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is like, I think they're a lot more connected.
Okay.
Than maybe the conversation can seem, because like when I sit down and make a record, yes, I'm thinking the overlying thing is I'm going to make everything that I want to make.
Right.
Right. But behind that, it's like moving in my head. It's like, cool. All right. Maybe I'll use something with a more up tempo or these type of instruments here, because I want to kind of encapsulate this feeling over here. So I think the process a lot of times just becomes very intertwined, to where like it's kind of like one thing. It's not like it's the separate. You know what I mean? Like a lot of times it is just kind of combined. And I think once you get good at that, like Michael got good at it, yeah, obviously, you know, like he just knew what was going to work because he had
every single time he had that experience.
You know?
Every single time.
When you think about like a Pharrell, he knows what's going to work regardless of what he's doing, what he's creating. A lot of these big pop artists already understand this because they have the experience to not only create, but also create in a space where they understand how these audiences react. So I just think it's more of a, you know, don't get me wrong, there is a specific thing out there where people just try to make records. We just talked about Kanye and his Backstreet
100%.
Voice. You know what I mean?
100%.
That's a thing. And I think to creatives, a lot of times when we hear stuff like that, it just comes across as forced and corny. And it's just like, all right, cool. If you like that, that's what I get it. But the end,
not for me,
you know.
I can dig it.
My soapbox.
There we go.
Hey, great comparison. Those are the extremes, but it drives the point home 100% with Prince and Mike, because two totally different approaches. Both of them are elite, all-time great artists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, there's a way for both to work. Shout out to the chat. If you're still with us, we appreciate you. My phone is messing up, so I apologize. I can't really see. I can see on the screen, though, so that's good. I'm biased. I'm like seeing my phone. NewOldHeads.com for all the education you need this year. If you see it, like it, subscribe, share it. And don't forget the $3 holler for our Patreon, where you can really get that raw and cut, you know, that good. Mm-hmm. And for the patrons, for the New Old Heads. So we appreciate y'all, and we'll see y'all next week. Peace.
Yeah.